Aussie music is something to be proud of.
Wear it like a badge.
Because it's Australian bands and artists that are the influences of so many other musicians the world over. So at Triple M,
we're proud to be able to showcase the power of the Aussie music scene.
Paying both homage to the greats that have stood the test of time, right alongside the current, the emerging, the future influences.
The ones that will be next to make their mark on the global music scene.
If it's Aussie and it rocks, it's right here. This is Triple M's Homegrown with Matty O.
Yes, right around the country on the Triple M network. That is 49 stations and on the Listener app. This is a treat. One of the first bands we ever had on the show. One of the biggest bands in the country, I should say. From Camden to the world. We're talking gold, platinum, number one albums. Arias have done it all. You know who I'm talking about. Tracks like My Gun, you know it. Things won't make it matter. Got good things, got you. Hoops, Hallelujah. Selling out tours everywhere they go. Consistently good songwriters. We're loving good mood. And their latest offering doesn't disappoint. Fresh off a very weird gig for Triple M in Melbourne. I welcome Samuel and Scott from the Rubens. Lads, welcome to Triple M Time.
Yeah, good to see you.
Good to be back.
That was a weird gig. We should describe what that was, because like radio stations do like corporate kind of functions and things that bands play. But I walked in, I saw the stage. Have you ever played as close to a bar as that before?
I think we should always play that close to a bar.
Yeah.
It was quite nice. Sam could have reached across and just, taken a shot or a beer or something.
Yeah. I mean, like, those corporate things, they can be weird, but I think, like, the key is just to break the ice. You know, the audience...
Yeah, it was good
like,
banter,
if you're in a little tiny, like, space and everyone's kind of there in a corporate situation, they're kind of uncomfortable as well because, like, this isn't a normal gig. So as quickly as you possibly can, you should just... acknowledge how weird it is for everyone and then move on and have fun together.
And I think like it's hard to like you misinterpret it sometimes because like as you guys were literally walking through before and everyone at the gig, they're just like, oh my God, we can't wait to see the Rubens. But when you go to play, they're just standing there stiff, like with no emotion because it's like a weird kind of vibe, right?
Yeah, it's kind of, you got to get them going. But we're not also expecting like them to be jumping around and like screaming. Our expectations were set and all we wanted to do was just play three songs really well and then, you know, go and meet the people afterwards. It was fun. It was good.
Are there any weird like kind of gigs like that that spring to mind as like the weirdest one of those that you've done?
Some weird ones in America sometimes.
Some weird ones,
have no idea who we are.
Yeah, and you're kind of just propped up as, hey, here's the Australians and clapping. Yeah. We've done like competitions as well where we played in like someone's backyard. Close to Newey, which was a funny one. And we played the gig for like some friends and family. Like it was some kind of promotion thing we did. Played the gig for their friends and family and then went and met like they had like
they
were breeding puppies
and they named them all of us.
They named some of the puppies after us. That was a strange gig.
It was so odd.
I think Elliot might have been the runt of the litter. And,
What about I'm asking bands this, I'm getting some good stories.
He's going to 11.
Hello Cleveland! Hello Cleveland!
What's your most Spinal Tap moment on stage?
Oh, we have them all the time. Yeah. I mean, like we reference it all the time. Like if we're playing, like we just recently did a tour, like we do a lot of regional touring and we end up in pubs and RSLs and places that generally don't have bands or the infrastructure for bands. So we often find ourselves like trying to walk through, you know, fully functioning kitchens, trying to get the stage and doing that whole rock and roll.
Rock and roll, turn around.
Yeah. Last time I saw you guys was in celebration of... Incredible cover as we celebrated 50 years of Mushroom. And I saw you guys at the concert. That was a really, really good show, guys. Talk about strange gigs as well. Like, have you ever been somewhere apart from a festival where there have been so many massive Australian acts and such a quick turnover at that concert?
Back to back, like there's more than 10 drum kits back. You know, it's crazy with the Lazy Susan, you know, stage. It was unbelievable.
The Lazy Susan.
It was unbelievable, honestly. The operations
were
crazy.
We were a starter.
I reckon there was some very stressed people there.
Totally.
That was like, it was a feat of like just showing what the Australian production industry can do, like crews in general, like all the people backstage. There was hundreds of people, like Scotty said, like, probably like 20 different drum kits back there. And it was like, I sat there with a beer and watched them like work backstage.
Yeah, it was impressive.
It was like watching like ballet.
Yeah.
Like crew ballet.
Yeah. And then you speed it up, and you put Benny Hill music over the top of it.
Yeah.
Do you guys go for a beer afterwards of that? I went for a beer. I was like, everywhere I looked, I'm like, man, I'm just. People, like
I got to meet some really cool, like, yeah, just talking to some, you know, just getting introduced to some old dudes and then afterwards walking away and then someone whispering in my ear, that was blah, 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 or so and so. And just like realizing that, like, we were surrounded by people who've like influenced the industry and the music we make.
Yeah.
It was just like, yeah, I don't think Australia has ever had an event with that many amazing old school artists as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was special. Very special. Yeah.
Mm. Celebrating Michael as well. Yeah. I know how close you guys were. And, you know, I think it was a conversation one of you guys told me about. A phone call when you're in New York and maybe he was back here about, you know, wanting to get played on commercial radio and things like that.
That was my phone call with him. I think like I was kind of representing the, you know, the boys, our interest. And, you know, obviously we really wanted to be on Triple J like every band, you know, did at the time. And, but we also had sort of aspirations to become, you know, known across the board in Australia. And I think that was kind of refreshing for Michael when we had that phone call. We were trying to decide which label to go with, and he gave me a call and we're in the studio. And I said, we want to be on commercial radio. We don't just want to be that indie band. We want to be everywhere. And I think for him, in hindsight, I get why he was kind of excited about that, because it was quite unusual for bands, indie bands back then, to actually want to be on commercial radio. It was kind of back then when it was a dirty word. And like, it was back in the era where brand deals were dirty and, you know, making money was bad, you know?
Yeah, and now it's completely flipped, right?
It's great. It's because people, I think the public have come to understand that, you know, it's really hard to be an artist and to make a living, and people have come to accept the fact that if you do a McDonald's, commercial, then that's great because it means you can afford to keep making music.
I think Gadinski would have seen like the hunger as well that's in that ambition of like a young band wanting to climb to the top, and him being like, all right, that's a challenge for me and I can deliver on that as well.
And it's probably pretty rare as well. Like bands want to be kind of popular, but they kind of don't know how. I think like you guys going, hey, this is the way we want to do it. This is where we see ourselves. It helps, you know, having a blueprint for him to be like, okay, cool. I know exactly what these guys want.
Yeah. And it's not hemming in, you know, the team of people who are going to try and help us do something that we have no idea how to do. Just saying like, hey, we're open to everything. Let you guys just go do your thing and like, we'll just make music and let's just try and make as many people as possible to hear it. Like that's simple.
Yeah. I'd like to touch on that. Like making music. I feel like you guys are so consistent. Like there's no real breaks. Like we're always getting new music from you guys, which is really super cool. Like, can you tell us a bit about your recording space? I feel like there's a lot of mystery around it. Like we see photos and stuff, but can you paint the picture for us?
Well, yeah, we've spoken before about the bunker, as it's called, an ex-World War II bunker that never saw World War II. It's in Camden, New South Wales, by the airport. Probably shouldn't give too much away because people will find it. But Will, our bassist, is heavily into music, nerddom, and is a music engineer as well.
Oh, cool.
We didn't start out recording there when we first started the band, but eventually he took over that place, just renting it out and turned it into a studio. It was just an empty hole in the ground, an empty cavern. But he's turned it into a studio now where we can rehearse and also record, which is probably, honestly, like we take it for granted now, but that would be why we're able to consistently put out music because we don't have to, you know, book proper studio time
and
we can just walk in there and record whatever songs we have ready to go, kind of thing. It's kind of like a well-oiled machine.
Where are you guys all living?
I'm in Wollongong, Sam's in Thirroul.
Yeah, cool.
Scotty's in
Camden.
Camden
with Will.
Sweet.
The Golden Triangle.
Zach's in Melbourne. Sydney. We're everywhere. We're trying to get away from each other. It would seem.
How's the group spread go with voice memos and things like that? Is that something that's always happening? I suppose because you're not all in the same place.
You mean with like music writing and stuff? We don't really do the voice memo stuff. We're too shy to send some.
Yeah.
Like now and again, when we're drunk, we'll show each other voice memos of like a song. Like we might, like Elliot might write and produce an amazing song.
Yeah.
And then we go and make it ourselves and make it cool, and then like down the line Elliot might show us the original voice memo, which is always really funny.
Very embarrassing,
but sharing that stuff. We try and make our demos as good as possible individually, and then once we feel like they're ready, we share them. We're kind of private songwriters.
Well, I love what you're also doing as well. You're doing a lot of regional touring. The Good Mood Tour, that's really cool, man. 16 shows, you guys nearly 5,000 Ks, nearly. That's pretty exciting, man. Extensive. How do you guys go, like, performing regionally? It's a lot of fun, right?
I reckon it's our jam.
Like, it's our bread and butter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And when you go to these places, they, you know, they're not really getting much music there. So they just really appreciate you.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
It's an easy win for us.
We staying in any pubs?
Yeah, a few pubs.
Stayed at the back of a couple of pubs, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, like, it's just fun because, you know, we've been doing it for a while as well, and that was always the appeal of being in a band. I think for all of us in the band was playing shows and traveling and seeing new places and stuff. So to be able to go to somewhere like Lake Tyres where we've never been before and play two shows and get to know this weird tiny town and just kind of have fun and then move on to the next place is like a real, we don't take it for granted for sure.
And I think it's like, you know, if any bands are listening to this who are up and coming, invest in doing this kind of touring because it's not just like you are doing a service to the communities that don't get music, but you're also going to do yourself a good service because if you can build a fan base out in these places, there's thousands and thousands of people out there in Australia that are outside of the capital cities. We did 10,000 tickets in January and didn't go to a capital city. Like it's an amazing business model as well. And we have the best time ever. It was essentially a summer holiday, just going to beach towns and playing shows every night. Yeah. But like, it's also just like a good thing, you know, a good thing aspirationally for bands who are coming up in Australia. Cause that's what they used to do. Like Midnight Oil and stuff back in the '90s and eighties, every single Australian band back then, they used to do the whole regional run.
Yeah.
And it kind of died off. And now it's good because like we see all like our sort of the other bands that we're friends with in Australia who are, you know, are touring bands, they're doing the same thing. And it's sort of a revival of like Australian touring like that. So I think it's really worthwhile.
And it's cool for like your fans who have been watching you guys for years to be able to go to these shows and play new music as well. Like that adds that, you know, rather than going to these places and playing the same set you've been playing for 4 or 5 years, you know, and like that's special for you and special for them too.
Yeah. I think like it's, every time we release a song, we can just pick a state or a territory and just go and do like 12 shows just promote that one song and just like play something new. And so it's just like, it doesn't stop. It doesn't have to stop for us.
Yeah, cool, man. Let's talk about this. So how did you get the ticket to go to Brazil? How did this work? Can you paint the picture about the video clip to this song?
It's rigged.
What the hell? How did this work when
I'll try and make it quick, but I guess like 12 years into our career, we've been doing music videos and the way that it usually goes is here's the budget. Let's talk to a director. Let's go to a set or whatever and let's hire a bunch of people and make a video in the traditional sense and put it up on YouTube and hopefully people watch it. We've done a lot of that. And I think this time we were trying to think of a way to engage with our fans and make them kind of part of the process. So we reversed it a little bit and just sort of got them involved from the get-go and said, Sam's going to go somewhere in the world. You know, just vote in the comment section, say where he should go. The top three places came up. One was, I think, Scotland. One was Brazil and Antarctica because they were trying to... into the snow.
Like, how can we send this band broke?
Broke and cold. So that happened. And then I picked the name out of the hat and it was Brazil. And the reason it was me was because... I'm the front man.
Don't argue with that.
Yeah, damn it.
Yeah, but I was kind of surprised because I was nervous but excited and I knew how lucky I was to be doing this. But I was surprised at like Elliot, Scotty here sitting with me and the rest of the boys, like they were really proud of me for doing it. But I'm secretly in the back of my mind going, I get a free trip to Rio. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, we're proud of him because it's like our nightmare to have to like, what he had to do. He didn't just go on holiday. He had to film himself the whole time and mime along to this song in public in front of people that don't like know what's going on.
Yeah.
He's in the middle of Rio.
Who is this psycho from Australia?
He had to become like a YouTuber pretty much for a week.
I was a vlogger.
A vlogger,
I was which paying off security guards to get on top of buildings to get away from the public so I could do stuff. Like, it was wild. But I think the other, like, a good thing about it was that I didn't have to do it in Sydney. So, if I didn't, no one knew. People are probably at some point going to go, that's the dude from the Rubens.
Yeah, totally.
Like, that's
what happened to him. I would never do that.
Yeah.
Brazil, I was kind of in a safe place. Like, they're like, who's this weird dude?
You weren't in a safe place. No. You did put the GoPro down your underpants because you were told you were going to get mugged or.
Where was that? The favelas.
That was, I was at the bottom of the favelas. I went to see the Rio Carnival. The carnival's coming up. So, they all do like this practice for the carnival. There's all these different samba schools they're called and they all sort of compete to get a chance to be in carnival. And so I was invited to go at nighttime at 9 p.m. to the rehearsal for this, but it's in the streets of the favela. So it's pretty dangerous, but the contact I had, who was a lovely guy, said like, you can come, there's kind of like an unwritten rule that no one robs anyone while it's happening. Like it's a safe place. Yeah. But I didn't realize that after it stops, it's back to, you know,
robbing.
Back to robbing. And so like, I was filming and, you know, and it was great. And then it ended the rehearsal and then I got a tug on my arm and it was this old lady and she was speaking to me in Portuguese and her friend was there as well. And she pulled me into this building and was like, speaking to me in Portuguese. So I was using Google Translate to sort of talk back and forth.
Yeah.
But she looked very panicked and eventually I got talking, like I worked out that she was saying there's people out the front, they're waiting to rob you.
No way.
Yeah. So I was like in her place, in her house, and then she just said, I'm going to book you a taxi. This is all like using Translate.
You're trying to secretly record this. As it's like, thinking about the film clip at the back of your mind?
No, because I didn't stop. I didn't see it. I was actually filming the la, 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 la part when she came up to me grabbed me. And so I have like the audio because I didn't stop filming. So I have this whole interaction,
audio.
But basically she booked me a cab and I walked out the back of her house and got home. But I had the GoPro in my underpants just because I was worried about losing the footage.
No, but then you also thought that could have been part of
it. I was worried that, this was whole part of, like, I was getting paranoid. Like, is this part of this massive, like, scam where they tell you you're in trouble, you're a tourist, and then they put you into the back of a cab and you never come home? But
yeah, this is like,
she was just a lovely, lovely lady who saved me.
Could have been like the Rubens banged up abroad edition, hey? Yeah. Let's talk about, you know, we were saying before, you know, the incredible career you've had, and I'd like to touch on that by playing a game. So this game's called Memory Lane, right? So what myself and Jules has done, the lovely producer on this show, is we've gone through your gig history, right?
Okay.
And I'm going to pluck random ones out to see what you remember. Now, it doesn't need to be the actual gig. It can be like maybe the plane ride, maybe staying at a hotel, maybe the drive to, the drive back.
I've got to say, before we even play this game, thank you for the effort because I'm actually looking forward to this. For the first time on a commercial radio show, I'm looking forward to the game that you've prepared.
Jules, we're putting this that in the promo. Awesome. Yeah. A lot of work goes into it.
No, all it's right. Awesome.
Okay, cool. So let's go back to 2012 in Mackay. You played a festival, the River Sessions with... We had the Hoods. We had Xavier Rudd. We also had Lady Hawk, Josh Pykes,
and Sultana.
Okay. King Canyons, Closure Must Go, The Rubens. Any memory from the River Sessions in Mackay?
I'm 2012. Foggy. I'm real foggy.
Did you say 2012?
Yeah, 2012.
Did you say San Cisco?
San Cisco.
I remember being side of stage with some of the members from San Cisco before we were going on and kind of being a little bit starstruck because like they'd blown up with...
Yeah,
like the year before, 2 years before or something, they'd blown up with that song and I was just like, why are we here? Also, they gave us lanyards. where can these things take us?
Do you remember the set at all? Do you remember what time you were on roughly?
Like 2 p.m. maybe, 3 p.m. I remember like cooking. I probably got sunburned. Yeah.
I remember I don't remember the set but or that actual festival, but I could bet on the fact that we were terrible.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
we hadn't learned how to play live.
We probably still didn't have guitar tuners and we're figuring things out, I reckon.
They're the magic days, though, aren't they? When like everything's like new, you're like, whoa, we get a rider. We got like a slab of beer. Like, this is like crazy.
Yeah. We still are.
Yeah,
that's probably why I don't remember anything.
Yeah.
All right. I reckon you guys might remember this. We're going a year later, South by Southwest. Geez, some big acts played this year, lads. 1975. No, I'm rolling my face up. No, I'm high off. Travis Scott as well.
What?
Chance the Rapper.
Wow.
Flume. Cold War Kids. Favorites like... Say I want something else. I don't know what Third Eye Blind we're doing there. And Cold War Kids as well. So, South by Southwest, can you paint the picture for our listeners who have never been to like a conference like this overseas?
It is massive. And we were booked on the Warner stage just before Paramore, weren't we?
Oh, we
and I was, and like skaters, and I was freaking out.
Yeah.
Like, it was amazing, but we were quite nervous, I think.
It's pretty wild, those kind of things. I guess like before we went, we didn't know. I guess you like as a punter or I guess someone who's not in a band, you think South by Southwest is just like any other festival, but it's not. It's a conference and it's basically just like every single mini venue in all of Austin puts on live music and you play like a 15-minute set and then you pack up and you leave and you play another set.
Yeah.
Mm. And so it's not like there's big festival sort of stages around where massive acts play, but it really is just like this heaving monstrosity of just like up and coming undiscovered artists trying to sort of get discovered.
Yeah.
So we played several different shows. I don't remember any of them being... The big show we played was sick, but I remember...
It was just load-ins and load-outs.
Yeah.
Was this... Were you guys signed to Mushroom at this stage?
We were with Mushroom and then we were with Warner in the States. So we played on the Warner stage, like Scotty was saying, when there was a band called Skaters before us. They were a really cool band as well.
Oh, yeah. Nice.
But yeah, it was just like a wild experience. Like, we'd never been there before to Texas, and we're just eating tacos and just taking it all in. Just good vibe.
It was a termite's nest. It was just constant, like, bands wheeling.
Dragging stuff down the street.
Yeah, I
remember, again, being starstruck, seeing Cold War Kids and just being like, holy shit, like...
Who was, what's his name? Was outside one of our shows, and we were like, holy shit, he was in the beer garden when we played a show. Foo Fighters.
Girl. Oh, the drummer, that Taylor.
Taylor was, outside one of our shows. Yeah. I don't think he came in, but we can say that he was.
He might have heard the
That's where we were at the time, where we were just like, holy shit, there's a famous drummer outside a show.
Yeah, that's cool, man. Yeah. Let's stay in the States, because you also did a festival with. Gotta testify. Come up in the spot looking extra fly. Governor's Ball, Kanye.
Do you know about this one?
Oh,
do you know what happened in this
festival? I got no idea.
You just picked this out without knowing what happened that year?
I got no idea.
It was pouring rain, like, it was like and a windy. It was,
When you guys were on it, did the whole thing get...
Well, Kings of Leon got canned the first night, didn't they?
Things got pushed back and cancelled, and it's on an island in New York, like basically, and really hard to get to. It was knee-deep mud, monsoonal rain, wind...
And you look forward to that so much, right? Yes. You're like, why this year? Why us?
We still absolutely loved it. Like, we played our set. We had a great time. Kind of got stuck there, I think. What else happened?
I think because it was over 2 days, so it's kind of like spread, like the experience. Like, we played at like 2 p.m. again after the monsoon. And I remember, like, it was just like mud in front of us and kind of like a swamp kind of vibe. It was just steamy and hot.
We saw Kanye though, right?
Saw Kanye West, saw Kendrick Lamar, saw Kings of Leon. Like, it was the same kind of thing where it's like, how are we
What are we doing here? Yeah. Seriously.
And watching those acts too, like 2013, like, they're good set lists.
Very,
you know what I mean? Like, they're all kind of killing it.
Yeah, if you think about
time,
it, it's before the set list got kind of shit.
Yeah, exactly.
yeah.
Peak.
How was your tour schedule on something like that? Was it like in and out every day, or did you have a bit of time to kind of chill out and look around and...
I think we were on tour at that point. Yeah, I remember staying in Manhattan in the Lower East Side, where we used to always stay. And, just getting, I think our manager had, her boyfriend had like a Scooby-Doo kind of van, like stoner van that he drove us out in his stoner van, and we played our set, and then we came back and just went out in the town. Yeah. It was.
We had some mates that were over there at the same time. Our mate who stayed in my hotel, crashed in my hotel one night because he didn't want to go back to his place. And he slept in the bathtub and just threw up all over himself. And so then decided to get rid of all of his pillows and blankets that he had in the bathtub by throwing them out of the window onto the street in New York.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
That's like the history of the band. It's like, we're not the ones throwing shit out the window.
It's our friends.
It's your dodgy mates from camping.
We're trying to look after them and bad things happen.
I think I remember seeing footage from this show, but it looked great. Let's talk Splendor. So, Blur. We had Tame 2, Pons. And Mark Ronson, I think, was there too. Splendor. Did that happen 2015? Because sometimes these aren't as accurate. Was it 2015?
If it was 2015, it would have been the year that it was still inside. The main stage was inside the tent.
Mm. No, Mark Ronson was main stage in the amphitheater, and it was
after
raining.
Hoops.
It was soaking.
Do you remember your set? All these big gigs are raining for you guys, hey?
It wasn't raining for us. No. So that was when Sam went out on the boat.
Yeah. So this is like post Hoops. New venue when they moved to the big amphitheater. And I went out on the boat, and it was a sea of people, probably 30,000-40,000 people, and one of the best sets of our lives.
Yeah.
The problem with these kind of shows where it's almost too good to be true is that you don't really enjoy it.
Yeah, you're like worrying about it, and when you're in like the kind of mode.
Out of body.
Yeah. I feel like now I can enjoy those kind of situations much more. I've worked out how to like be present and like just be like, we're lucky, this is sick, let's just like make sure you take this in. But I don't remember a single moment of that set because I was nervous. And
yeah, of course.
It was too much.
Yeah.
Now, people listening might not understand what you mean by the boat. Can you please explain? Yeah. Like, I know what you're talking about, but explain the process behind and what you did.
It was basically just like during like a one album cycle of like 2 years of promoting a record and touring the record, I was crowd surfing, but then crowd surfing just seemed like it would be more fun with like an inflatable dinghy. So we just took an inflatable dinghy around on tour with us. You know, our manager Greg would have to like, or Joel at the time would have to deflate, and then like they'd be side of stage, like we'd start the set, one of them just like blowing it up. Like,
yeah, seeing the future.
Okay? They didn't bring a pump. So one of them's like, yeah, physically blowing up this dinghy so it'd be ready for in time for like whatever song I would go out in the crowd. But
ever get punctured?
No,
it's a stern.
I think we went through a lot. Like none of them made it to the next gig. Like that became a kind of a staple for a while, where we would have to go to a Kmart or a Big W or something and find some inflatable thing before whatever show we're going to play. Because now everyone expects like Sam to be on an inflatable thing. Yeah.
That's funny.
I got to bring that back.
Yeah, we should bring that back.
It made it so easy.
Yeah, I was going to say,
you have limbs and stuff going everywhere. Like, it's just like this nice thing.
You just go out there with a book and relax. Repeating the chords. Yeah.
Did the boat come out for this? This would have been fun supporting Pink. Because these were a lot of shows as well when you did this. Like, Pink is a phenomenon in Australia.
Yeah.
And that would have been, talk us through that.
No boats.
Support band, there's no.
No, not allowed.
We went on an after party boat with them, which was cool.
Oh, cool.
Oh, yeah.
That was fun.
Yeah, they're an amazing crew. I think she does touring that level right, where she treats like crew, artists, everyone in her team. Like it's almost like she vets them and makes sure they're good people. Because everyone you meet on the whole thing is just like a lovely person, and they make it a fun place to be.
Yeah,
I just remember the food being incredible.
The food was incredible.
Good catering.
Is it rude if I go back for thirds? I'm just getting more calorie intake.
Yeah. It was funny because we were like, you know, every city we went to, we'd kind of like post up there for 2 weeks because she's playing like, you know, 8-9 shows at Rod Laver. So we're like in Melbourne for 2 weeks. And it's just funny being at the point where you're going to Rod Laver every day and like saying hi to the security guard and walking through like your mates. Morning. Yeah, it's like you're going to work every day, but you're going to play a show.
Yeah, totally.
We got comfortable and got to like explore different cities for the first time ever. So it was sick.
I was going to say, because you guys are like in and out, you know, most days, it must be nice to be in a place for a long time and to play arenas.
Mm. Yeah.
How cool.
It was incredible.
Let's go one more because this is special. Play me this man.
Oh, yeah.
The Boss and Jimmy Too.
Yeah. Hanging Rock, and then we did one up in the winery up at Hunter Valley.
I think he did two tours. On the first one, we opened, and then Jimmy Barnes, and then The Boss. And then he came back for another tour the next year, and we were the main support that year. So we were extremely lucky.
What were those shows like? What was it like watching The Boss?
It's just incredible.
Yeah.
Just and just so fit. Like, you know, he's playing for 3.5 hours and he's playing like a 20-year-old and just on the piano jamming. Like, it's unbelievable to watch.
How was Max on the sticks?
Oh, incredible.
Yeah.
Always incredible.
Yeah, it was just like, that was one of the first times we'd seen the difference between someone who's kind of like an elite, immortal rock and roll god.
Especially when they arrive in a helicopter.
Playing bands, you know, like us, and just seeing like, okay, like I'll never be like that. I could do everything I wanted to. I'll never be like that. And that's cool.
Yeah.
But it was just like, it was a whole different level. It was sick.
Those support acts are so important to play with bands at that level because you learn something every time, I feel.
Mm-hmm.
What was the one thing you watched from like The Boss, for example, like the way he played and like his stage show?
Oh, I don't know. I feel like there's a lot that you could look at, like Sam saying, and say, okay, that's unattainable. I think like maybe, you know, a commitment to just the show, yeah. I think is probably something we took away from that.
Joy as well, just pure joy.
Yeah. And also like, and we, something we learned from Pink as well, like connecting to, playing to that type of crowd, a big crowd, connecting to people that are at the back of the room as well, which he does so well, which Pink does so well, which so many massive artists do so well. Whereas like we're used to playing, you know, smaller shows where you don't have to look up or look back to find those people in the back of the room.
Yeah.
That was a real learning curve. Not for us, for Sam. Like we can do whatever we're going to do, but Sam.
Yeah, I learned a lot playing with Pink.
Yeah.
After the first show, I honestly think like we were subpar in terms of like playing to a stadium audience. Like we hadn't done that before, and I had to go out of my comfort zone a little bit and be like, how's everyone doing with the bow? You know, do that stuff in our own way, but get comfortable.
Yep.
Mm.
Those kind of tropes like are actually there for a reason. Like there's a reason why everyone does that stuff, and it's because you want to engage everyone from front to back. So like, there was stuff like that that we learned. I think like with the boss there, it was just, for me, it was just, he was just loving it the whole time. He was smiling for 3 hours straight and having a fucking awesome time. So trying to find that in what we do is key.
You're right. When you play those bigger shows, a lot becomes about the banter, hey? Like your banter's going to be on point.
You can't be subtle. You can't get away with like nuanced little like throwaway lines off the mic or banter between bandmates that's kind of like quiet, like you're in a club. You've got to be quite direct and just like tell them what you want them to feel, basically. Yeah. Just like ask for a response, be really direct, get everyone really excited, and then just get to the next song.
That's
a bit of an art.
Yeah, absolutely. What's... out of all those shows and kind of looking back throughout your career, what is the one show where you've been hit up for the most guest list spots? Is it like a headline show somewhere at a big venue, maybe in Sydney or in
Taylor
Melbourne?
Swift.
Yeah.
Taylor Swift. We weren't even supporting. Seriously. We're just in the industry. So
we just play guitar.
Yeah. We should touch on that. How was Taylor?
It was incredible. I took my wife there and for, like as a Christmas gift.
Yep.
And so the girls at Mushroom really like hooked me up with some pretty incredible seats.
Shout outs.
Yeah, so thanks, Mushroom. Lauren. But yeah, a bit of a moment for me was in the last song, I thought, I'll start filming, you know, the last song, get a bit of a vibe. And then I sort of turned to my right and Travis Kelce was there and no one was noticing him because it's the last song and they're just focused on Taylor.
Everyone's being respectful of Taylor.
Yeah, and I'm just a bit obnoxious and things like that. So, and he looked at me, gave me a signal and gave me a fist pump. So, and then all these little Swifties were like, what the hell? And like just, like they were losing their mind at me and I was like, it was fun. Yeah, it was great. But incredible production, like insane. But it was a great night. Lots of glitter. I went to a wedding the next day. I had to have 3 showers before I was presentable.
Nice. Not sparkling anymore. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I really got into it, so yeah.
Awesome, man. All right, well, I got you guys here. I know we're running low on time, but I want to play one more game.
On Triple M's Homegrown with Matty-O, it's time for...
Uh-oh, it's Right Party or Dinner.
Lovely jewels out there. So I'm going to play you 3 acts, right? This is called Right Party Dinner. Now, I need individual answers. So I'm going to give you 3 acts picked at random. One you've got to write a song with. The second you've got to party with, and the third you've got to take home for dinner. Okay.
I'll come first.
Okay. So here we go. Silverchair, your second act.
Anybody find me?
Queen, and third act. So you're writing a song, you're partying, and the third you're taking out to dinner with Silverchair, Queen, and Oasis.
Oh, my. Oh, okay. Right. So right. I would write with... like in terms of party, am I just like at an event and they're there too? Are they there with me and we're having fun together?
You can do whatever you
want. We're having fun together. And
unlimited
like
budget. Okay,
cool. They like
so,
me.
So right would be Queen.
Okay, cool.
Dinner would be. Oh, this is hard. I don't really want to have dinner with Silverchair, but.
Yeah.
I'd party with Silver.
And they're all in their primes, and they're all getting along.
No. I reckon dinner with Silverchair and then party with Oasis.
Okay, I like that.
Right with Queen.
You're right, my man. What are we doing?
I'm partying with Silverchair because I've seen them party before.
Yeah, they actually are loose.
They're loose. Right with Queen.
Yeah, nice.
What was the last one?
Dinner with Oasis.
Dinner with Oasis.
Oh, yeah.
That's
you can kind of party at dinner with Oasis or something.
Well. The whole thing's a party, right?
Yeah, technically. One more, Al.
Okay,
partying with Queen would be incredible.
I would party with Queen.
I'd
write with Oasis because it would be easy, and then we'd go party.
You go to the pub.
Yeah. It would just do 3 chords and a beautiful chorus. Done.
Yeah.
And then I'd take Silverchair to home for dinner.
We're essentially doing everything with everyone, aren't we?
Yeah, exactly.
And we're all together. Lads, thanks so much for coming in. Going for a talk down memory lane. All the new music, we're absolutely loving it. Good friends of the show. Congrats on all your success. Looking forward to all the big news this year. And more importantly, just good to see you guys again.
Thanks for having us, Maddie.
Thanks, Maddie.